Welcome to this edition of Back to Basics with Pastor Brian Broderson.
This is an astounding thing to see how blind people can become. They're saying, we know that this man is a sinner. What was the premise? Why would they say such a thing? What were they basing it on? Because he broke our rules. He didn't do things the way we think they ought to be done.
Today on Back to Basics, Pastor Brian continues his study in the Gospel of John. Join us as Pastor Brian begins his teaching on John chapter 9, verses 1 through 41, in a message titled, Jesus and the Man Born Blind. Now, here's Pastor Brian.
Let's open up to John chapter 9. John chapter 9 says, Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? The Jewish leaders had taught that suffering, disease, malady of whatever sort, were always the result of sin. If you had a problem in your life, then it certainly had to be related to sin. Now, if it was a problem that was there from birth, they taught that perhaps the baby could have somehow sinned in the womb, or it was actually that the parents had sinned and this malady was a judgment upon their sin. And so the disciples had been influenced by that teaching. And so here's a man who was blind. He was born blind. And they were curious. Was it this man who sinned, or was it his parents? Jesus answered, Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him. Boy, I love the way Jesus just clears things up so quickly. He just dismissed the whole thing. Neither this man nor his parents sinned. Now, of course, sin is ultimately what has produced all of the problems that we have in the world. And so you could trace all sickness and suffering and those things. Ultimately, you could trace them back to sin indirectly. But they were implying that there was some direct connection. Jesus said, no, that's not the case. But that the works of God should be manifested in him. So Jesus seems to be saying that the man was allowed to be born into this condition so that God would have an opportunity to demonstrate his power. Now, some people have thought that that is not a good way to understand this. One commentator has actually changed the punctuation, which is allowable, but rather than having a comma after sinned, he has put a period. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, period. End of discussion. A new sentence. But that the works of God should be revealed in him, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. So this particular commentator, he doesn't agree with the idea that God would have allowed this man to be born in this condition just so some years down the road, God could manifest his glory in him. And I can understand his feeling about that, but you know, it does seem to me that you can find biblical support for God allowing difficulties and struggles and tragedies for greater purposes. Think about the experiences of Joseph, for example. Joseph, at the age of 17, was sold into slavery by his brothers, and for the next 13 years, he lived a very difficult, challenging life as a prisoner in Egypt. But in the end, God brought him out of Egypt, made him, for all practical purposes, the prime minister of Egypt, and then saved all of Jacob's family through Joseph. And although his brothers intended evil for him, Joseph himself said God meant it for good. Think of Job. The devil certainly meant to do Job harm, but God allowed Job to go through that season of suffering and then blessed him immensely in the end. Or think of the children of Israel. God leads them into Egypt and allows them to suffer in Egypt, but then brings them out of Egypt in a most glorious fashion, in which he is, of course, greatly glorified and made known to the world. A little bit later on in John's gospel, we'll come to the story of Lazarus, who was allowed to die so that Jesus might resurrect him from the dead to the glory of God. And then Paul, he lived with an ongoing affliction, but he understood it to be for the greater purpose of God's glory. So on the one hand, I can sort of understand why that one particular commentator doesn't want to see Jesus saying that God allowed this man to be in this condition so that he might do a great work. But I think that scripturally we can support that. And so I think we ought to leave the punctuation the way it is and just understand that that seems to be what the Lord is saying. That this man was allowed to be born blind so that God could reveal his greatness and his glory through this man's infirmity. Now, I would imagine if we could have a conversation with that man tonight, and if we were to say, you know, what do you think about that? You know, how do you feel about God allowing you to be born blind? I mean, let's just say he was 30 years old, 40 years old at the time. It doesn't give his age, so we don't know. But, you know, we might say to him, you know, have you been able to deal with that? Has that been a problem for you? Have you sort of been upset at God all these years? You know, God, why did you let me live for all those years in blindness? I would venture to say that he would say, what? Are you kidding? Oh, no, that blindness, that was nothing. That was fine. Oh, I did all right, you know. But man, when Jesus came that day and healed me, oh! And I would imagine that he would not be the least bit upset about that kind of situation, that God used him in that way. That's what happened as we go on in the story. But Jesus said, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. And when he had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which is translated sent. It's interesting. John sees here a sort of a spiritual connection. Jesus sends him to the pool of Siloam. The pool of Siloam was supplied by waters that were sent to it from a channel. And so Siloam meant sent. But now Jesus is sending the man to the pool of Siloam. And John sees in the very name of the pool of Siloam, he sees in a sense a prophecy of the event that was transpiring at that time. And so he went and he washed and he came back seeing. Therefore, the neighbors and those who previously had seen that he was blind said, "Is not this he who sat and begged?" Some said, "This is he." Others said, "He looks like him." He said, "I am he." Therefore, they said to him, "How were your eyes opened?" He answered and said, "A man called Jesus made clay, anointed my eyes, and said to me, 'Go to the pool of Siloam and wash.' So I went and washed, and I received my sight." Then they said to him, "Where is he?" He said, "I don't know." They brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Verse 14 is a key verse. Now it was a Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. That's a very important little bit of information there. You see, the Pharisees had the idea that any sort of work on the Sabbath day whatsoever was a violation of the Sabbath, even if it was something that was beneficial to another person, even something like a healing. But not only that, they had a specific law against making clay on the Sabbath day. Actually, the law had said you could not knead nor could you mix anything on the Sabbath day. So when Jesus spit on the ground and then began to knead that together to form the clay, they would have considered that a violation of the law. Now, these guys had taken the law of God, which was fairly straightforward and, you know, fairly simple, and they had made it so complicated and so burdensome. And they were then the watchdogs. And anybody violating the smallest element of the law, they were there swiftly to pronounce a judgment upon them. Jesus, at this stage in his ministry, he is in open conflict with the religious leaders of his day. And at this point, Jesus is going out of his way to challenge their entire system. Now, Jesus could have done anything. He could have just simply said to the guy, "Receive your sight." He did that on other occasions. He didn't have to go through the procedure that he went through, but he intentionally went through it in order to provoke these men, in order to show the absurdity of their position and to show his superiority over them as leaders of the people. So the Pharisees then asked him, this man, how he had received his sight, and he said to them, "He put clay on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Therefore, some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath." Now, what this really means is that he did not keep the Sabbath according to their interpretation of how you ought to keep the Sabbath. Jesus kept the Sabbath in the sense that it was intended by God. But you see, they had put so many additional rules and regulations. Jesus didn't keep that part of it. So he's done this miracle. Now, here's another bit of information that's important in this story. The Jews held to the belief that God alone could heal blindness. Blindness in the sense of a person born blind. And they actually had attributed that ability to the Messiah himself, because the prophecies had said that. Isaiah 35 declared that the Messiah would open the eyes of the blind, and many other passages did as well. So they had themselves the teaching that when Messiah comes, one of the ways that we'll be able to know that he is here is that he will be able to open the eyes of those who were born blind. So now here's a man who was born blind, and his eyes have been opened. But they're saying this man cannot be from God because he doesn't keep the Sabbath. But others said, how can such a man who is a sinner, or how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. So, you know, some of them were just completely blinded by their prejudice because of their view of their own rules and so forth. But others were a little more rational. And they realized, wait a second. Now, you're saying he can't be from God because, you know, he supposedly violated the law. But how could a man who is a sinner do something like this? And so there was a division among them. They said to the blind man again, what do you say about him? Because he opened your eyes. He said, he is a prophet. But the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight. So they concluded, this guy must be lying. Until they called the parents of him who had received his sight, and they asked them, saying, is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But by what means he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age, ask him, he will speak for himself. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that Jesus was the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. So that's where things had come to now. They're threatening the people. And this poor couple are brought in and they are intimidated by this group of religious leaders. And they're afraid to speak because they don't want to be excommunicated from the synagogue. And so the parents said, he is of age, ask him. So they again called the man who was blind and said to him, give God the glory. We know that this man is a sinner. This is, you know, an astounding thing to see how blind people can become. They're saying, we know that this man is a sinner. What was the premise? Why would they say such a thing? What were they basing it on? Because he broke our rules. He didn't do things the way we think they ought to be done. You know, the Jews to this very day believe that God gave the law to Moses that was passed on in written form. But at the same time, God gave what is known as the oral law to Moses that was passed on orally by tradition. And they believe to this very day that those two things are inseparable. That you cannot possibly understand or interpret or live according to the written law of Moses without the oral law to interpret it. Now, the oral law has long since been written down as well. Some people today are puzzled by the fact that the Jews have the same Old Testament that we do, and yet they can't seem to see what we see in it, namely the Lord Jesus Christ. Don't be puzzled by that. You see, the problem is the Jew cannot simply read the Old Testament. He has to read the Old Testament through the grid of the oral tradition. And he's not free to interpret the Old Testament on his own or to just simply read it and then draw his own conclusion regarding what it means or who it pertains to. He has to go through this filter, this rabbinic filter that has been set up. And so immediately following the written law of God, you have what is called the Mishnah. The Mishnah is the rabbinical commentary on the Torah. And then you have what's called the Gemara. The Gemara is the rabbinical commentary on the Mishnah, which is the rabbinical commentary on the Torah. And all of these are compiled together in what is known as the Talmud. Perhaps you've heard of the Talmud. So you see, it's this oral tradition that Jesus completely disregarded. Jesus said that it absolutely had no validity whatsoever. He said that you, speaking to them, he said, you have taken the doctrines of men and you have sought to turn them into the commandments of God. And see, this was the big contention between Jesus and these men. It was his unwillingness to accept their theory of the oral tradition being from God and binding. But that's what they're holding on to. That's what's causing their consternation. He has violated the law. He spit on the ground and he made clay. He violated the Sabbath. He mixed some compound together. That's a violation of the Sabbath, they said. But again, you know, it's just amazing how blind people can become to the obvious and to the truth when their minds get set on some sort of thing like this, some tradition, some view that they hold dear. They oftentimes become completely irrational. And that's where these guys were at. And so they're angry. They said, give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. Now this guy, think about this. Here's a guy who has been a beggar all of his adult life, probably, maybe even younger. Here's a guy who has had no education, apparently. Here's a guy who has basically been, in many ways, an outcast, because remember, he would have been considered to have been in the condition that he was in because of sin. So, hey, here's this blind guy, and he was born that way. He deserves to be in the state that he's in. But this guy, he's a scrapper. He's pretty tough. Now, his parents are totally intimidated. When they say, is this your son who was born blind? How is he made whole? They say, ask him. We don't know. He, on the other hand, he's going to get into a scrap with these guys. And it's great. I wish we could get this one on film. So he says, verse 25, whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see.
Let's take a quick break and listen to what Pastor Brian and his wife Cheryl are saying about this month's resource on Back to Basics.
Cheryl, you like devotionals. I do as well. And there's somebody that you love very much who wrote a devotional.
Would that be my father, Chuck Smith?
That would be him, yes.
I knew it. And that would be Wisdom for Today. You know, there's a great story about that devotional too. Brian, maybe you remember when we were doing Pastor's Perspective together, and somebody was asking me for a devotional that they'd recommend. And I started to recommend John Corson's because it was a devotional for her husband. And all of a sudden, we heard kind of a knock on the door, and we looked over, and there was my dad. And he was signaling something to me.
Yeah.
And then he opened the door, and he said,
Cheryl.
He was
reminding you that he had
that's
written
right. I wrote
a devotional.
That's right.
Yes.
And so, of course, without further ado, we said, wait, get Wisdom for Today.
Yeah.
It's a great devotional.
Yeah.
It really is.
And it's just a brief paragraph for each day, imparting wisdom from God's Word.
That's right.
Thanks, Pastor Brian and Cheryl, for sharing about this month's resource. You can order the book Wisdom for Today by Chuck Smith by going to our website, backtobasicsradio.com. Scroll down until you see the photo of Wisdom for Today, and then click on the donate button. When you give a gift to Back to Basics, we'll send you the Wisdom for Today devotional by Pastor Chuck that is sure to be one of your all-time devotional favorites. And it's also an excellent guide for reading the Bible in 1 year. It's our way of saying thank you for your generous support of this ministry. We'd also like to remind you that all of our other resources are waiting for you at backtobasicsradio.com or by calling our request line at 1-800-733-6443. That's 1-800-733-6443. Our desire is to encourage you in your daily walk with God. We'll continue tomorrow with more valuable insights from Pastor Brian as we study together in the Gospel of John. Back to Basics is the preaching and teaching ministry of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, California.